Time to get our view from the middle. You can find his work for USA Today. Either check out the nearest hotel lobby or online, usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. He is our Wednesday leadoff man. Mr. Schroeder, a good day to you, sir. How's it going?
It's good. How are you?
All is well out here. I want to start with what's happening. I don't know if it's exactly your backyard, but the Thunder have become what I think is one of the big stories to date in these playoffs. The opener, a disaster, back to the drawing board. You think maybe because of so much attention, deservedly so, on their players, Durant and Russell Westbrook, is it possible that people might be forgetting Billy Donovan, just a rookie coach, and maybe he deserves some due for his willingness to make changes?
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, you know, one of the things they've done is they've played Enes Kanter and Steven Adams, two big men, at the same time down the stretch of the last couple of games, and it's really caused the Spurs and a ton of problems, and basically has completely neutralized 40-year-old Tim Duncan. It looks like he's kind of fallen off the age cliff. I mean, you can't even play him in the game against those guys. I mean, it's an amazing turnabout for the series. I think Billy Donovan's done a really nice job for a rookie head coach, for sure. And I don't know that, you know, you might even be able to say he's out-coached Greg Popovich, or at least he's holding his own against him. And I understand what you're saying when you say that, because Pop is, you know, a Hall of Fame coach.
Sure.
Maybe the best coach, you know, in the last, you know, 15 years or so in the NBA, and maybe longer than that. But I think Billy Donovan has held his own. The other thing I would tell you is that I was you know, some of the Oklahoma City media, I just got back from Dallas, some of the Oklahoma City media was talking about a quote that Danny Green, the Spurs forward, had, where he said they'd love to execute better, but every time they start to run a play, the Oklahoma City bench is calling out what the play is, and then those guys are, you know, on the court are, you know, thwarting it. And, you know, that's assistant coaches and head coaches and really good coaching in practice to have, you know, to have figured out the sets and know what they're running. And I think that's I actually think it's been kind of an eye-opening series. I don't know that, you know, the one thing you don't know about the NBA is you never know what will happen from game to game. I mean,
yeah.
If you'd have talked after game one, which you referred to, and you just said the Thunder will be up 3-2 and people will think they're going to close it out at home on Thursday night after that 40-point loss or whatever it was, we'd have both said we were crazy. Right?
Right.
I mean, just don't know. It's such a people's opinions change so radically from game to game to game. And in matter of fact, you know, I think the pendulum swing from the opinion is just amazing because it's just a basketball game. Different things happen. I mean, the Spurs could easily win the next two games and win the series. I'm like everybody else. I think the Thunder have the upper hand by more than the numbers. They just look better. But none of us should be real surprised if the one and the two seed end up playing each other in the Western Conference Finals like we would have predicted before the playoffs started.
As far as opinions, Russell Westbrook generates a lot of them. The whole,
yeah.
Where does he rate on the hierarchy? I mean, no question, even from UCLA, he defends, he plays so hard, he's so competitive, and we know he's got his warts and flaws, but in evaluating him, is it fair to say, look, let's look at most recently, last year when Durant got hurt, how he's playing now, and that he's matured a little bit. He's evolved, and he's a better player. He's one of the great players because he's improved.
Those who watch the Thunder have a love-love-hate relationship with him, and maybe love-love, not quite like would be a better way to put it. Hate is a real strong word, and it's not that they don't like him, but he'll be good Russell, good Russell, good Russell, and then it'll be bad Russell, bad Russell. But he's cut way down on that. He's far more good than bad. And, you know, I think the thing that's infuriating is you can see that he is, you know, perhaps the most talented just in terms of sheer athletic talent point guard we've seen in a very long time. And he can do an unbelievable amount of things from that position. And yet, sometimes he'll shoot up too many shots, as he did in game three, when they lost the game they could have won. He took 31 shots, and sometimes he'll have some defensive lapses where you're like, why don't you play that shutdown defense we know you can play, and instead you just don't seem interested in doing that. And it's those couple of things that I think cause people maybe to not think of him the way they could think of him. You know, I think Mark Cuban, the Mavericks owner, was just nuts when he said he's not a superstar. He's clearly a superstar. He finished, I think, fourth in the MVP voting ahead of Durant.
Right.
Yesterday. But he's an enigma. You don't quite know what you're going to get with him. But I do think Oklahoma City fans have started to figure out that Russell Westbrook has evolved, as you put it, and he's getting better and better all the time. He's maturing. But, I mean, this is his eighth season in the league. Shouldn't he be mature at this point?
Yeah, I agree. But I think, to your point, if you look at the stat sheet last night, I heard somebody say, wow, he was only one assist away from a triple-double. And I was like, and if you throw in two more turnovers, he would have had a quadruple-double because he had eight, and he would have had 10. So that's kind of
it. But down the stretch, you know, he made the play.
Yeah.
Frankly, his defensive plays were really good too. But he made the plays that won the game for him. I mean, Durant did too. They hit back to back huge threes. He made the play that everybody's talking about. Kawhi Leonard really, fouled him on. But then, to his credit, he continued the hoop and 3-point play ended, iced the game. He made tons and tons of plays. I'll say this: he's as entertaining as anybody in the game this side of Steph Curry. There's nobody like that guy.
No, I agree. I'm a big fan. I've been defending him and saying, just watch this guy play. He'll run through a brick wall for a victory. We continue with George Schroeder. I asked you this earlier, but you work in that state, which is obviously an incredible college football hotbed. Obviously, elevated to March Madness with the Sooners making the finals in basketball. But right now, the fans, the media coverage, radio shows like this, how dominant is Thunder basketball, or are they counting down to Baker Mayfield and Sooner football?
Listen, right now, there are two topics. There's Thunder basketball. I guess there's three topics. There's Thunder basketball, and then there's Big 12 expansion.
Right.
All joking aside, those are the two topics. And right now, Thunder basketball is way ahead of anything else. Look, they'll come around to talking Oklahoma football and some Oklahoma State football and stuff like that, and there'll be plenty of excitement for that. But right now, it's all Thunder all the time. And that's one of the things. When I moved out to Eugene, I left a college market and went to a college market, which was fantastic. I love it. When I came back, I had come back to a pro market, and the place had changed. It's an amazing transformation.
Interesting.
In Oklahoma City, how that's really it sort of becomes a little more cosmopolitan in some ways, because you're now discussing the NBA and the talk show callers and the readers of newspapers have sort of had their knowledge elevated. They're still huge college football fans. There's no lessening of the passion with that, but they've added a passion for the NBA.
Very interesting. Speaking of the Big 12, last Wednesday night you posted your story about the Big 12 football meetings in Arizona.
Yeah.
And I like you called it the never-ending story of expansion. So they collected data from a research firm. So beyond will they or won't they, I thought one aspect kind of resonated. Are the primary concerns alleviated going to 12 teams in a conference title game? Or, if I read correctly, does that just bring about as many issues and as many questions?
Well, I mean, look, I think that if your primary purpose is to get into college football playoff, it does look like having a 12-team league, two divisions, and an 8-game conference schedule and a conference championship game gets you into the playoff more often. That said, that's not the primary concern, first. Secondly, there's no way they're going from 9 games in the conference schedule to 8 games. That's just not going to happen, because that changes the that makes it – you've got to go find a non-conference game. It hurts the gate because you have one less supposedly marquee game for many of these schools at home game every year. That's not going to happen. And then the other thing I would say is this. None of that addresses the fact that we're talking about the same old question, which is, which schools are you talking about and what do they bring us?
Right.
And the answer is, it's that kind of group of schools that are all sort of mid-majors that would like a call-up. And there are a significant amount of schools at this point, from my sort of unofficial survey of talking to people around the league, who are not convinced that's a good idea. And so I remain, I guess nothing should just stun us. But I remain sort of the mind that they are not going to expand, because expanding by Cincinnati and Connecticut, or Cincinnati and Central Florida, or Cincinnati and Memphis, or whoever you want it to be, BYU and whoever, those are non-starters for most of the guys. Now, the Oklahoma president is all for it. There are a couple others who are all for it, and there are some in the middle who could be convinced. But Texas is dead set against it, and that's one vote. But sometimes one vote is worth more than one vote, if you catch my drift.
Sure,
that's
especially
true with Oklahoma
them.
On one end and Texas on the other.
We're talking with George Schroeder. You mentioned Central Florida. Aha. There was a piece in USA Today by a colleague of yours who spoke with Scott Frost, former Duck
That's
coordinator.
Right.
His new gig, obviously no picnic, as they lost them all. This, like he said, was a pretty good job. What did he have to say about his desire to become a head coach, but I guess finding the right job as opposed to taking the first job offer that came along?
Yeah, well, Scott had interviewed with some people and had had interest from other people over the last couple of years in some of the jobs you've heard about. But, what made this the right job? I think things changed a little bit. Look, UCF was 0-12. There's no question. That is a tough spot to start. But on the one hand, on the other hand, anything you do that includes a W makes you better than the last guy, at least for the initial start, the first season. And I think the other thing Scott Frost thinks is, you can have a completely clean slate, you can run the Oregon offense, you can try to mimic it, and wow, what a place to recruit! And Central Florida, the entire Florida, state of Florida, that and Texas, and obviously California too. If you want to talk about places to recruit, those are the three places, and Florida might be the best place to recruit, frankly. And so it's also a school. I don't think they're getting a call up to the Big 12, but it's a place where the school has changed tremendously over the last 20 years, both in athletics and just in the school itself. It used to be a commuter school. That's changed. But it's got, 40,000 kids enrolled. I mean, it's a big school. I think it's a good opportunity for Scott Frost to cut his teeth as a head coach, win some games, and then at a certain point, somebody else gives him a call up, and he ends up, at a Power 5 school, and the kind of Power 5 school where you can win it all. I mean, because, that's the thing. You don't want to go to that mid-level Power 5 school if you can help it. Now,
right.
Sometimes that's what happens. But you go to a Group of 5 school where you think you can win and win big if you can get it cranked up, and that's clearly what he thinks. And then you maybe have your pick of some big boy jobs, 2, 3, 4 years down the road. And I think that's what Scott Frost is thinking. I don't think he's wrong about that. I think that's a smart move.
No, well, he's a smart guy, I could tell you that.
Absolutely.
I want one final question. Some might be surprised to hear what he had to say about the level of interest most players had in Oregon. I found it sort of surprising that most guys, loved everything about Oregon. They had that willingness to move far from home. But isn't this kind of interesting now, because he's now in a very fertile recruiting ground, that now he's going to be more prone to say to the guys, well, now you could stay home and close to home. And that's going to be kind of like a 180 angle he's got to pull in recruiting.
Yeah, absolutely. But let's be honest. He is not going to be going up against Oregon very often
right.
in recruiting. First of all, they don't recruit a ton in Florida, obviously. And secondly, the kids that are that good, UCF's not typically going to be in on. The kids that are good enough to be going to Oregon or Alabama or Florida, Florida State, are not the same kids, at least certainly not initially, that UCF's going to be getting. Absolutely. His deal is going to be, Come! We're going to do what Oregon does. We're going to do it at UCF, and you don't have to go 3,000 miles to do it. I would do the same thing if I were him. It makes a lot of sense. But Oregon fans shouldn't be real concerned for all those reasons I listed. They're not going to be recruiting against Scott Frost while he's at UCF anyway.
No,
very often.
I just found that he's got to kind of tweak his approach. And,
sure. Yeah, but you got to accentuate the positives, And when you're at UCF. You're going to talk about how you're going to run the Oregon offense and play fast. And by the way, they've unveiled sort of the same sort of uniform situation where, and of course, a lot of schools do this now where
right.
they have multiple sets and they wear something different every week. Oregon started it, but now it's not unique. UCF's going to do everything Oregon as Oregon as Scott Frost can do it.
So are you going to make it to the game tomorrow night? You have plans to check in game six to see if this thing gets closed out?
Well, I wish I could. You know, tickets are a little hard to come by, as you might imagine. And we've got people for USA Today covering that.
Okay.
So, probably not. I probably will watch it on TV with the kids.
Awesome.
They enjoy it, especially the littlest guy. He loves basketball. So.
That's terrific. Love hearing that. All right, George, good stuff as always. Catch his work, usatoday.com, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. Always look forward to it. You have a great weekend. Enjoy the game tomorrow night.
All right, thanks, man.
All right, take it easy.